From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the ocean, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Open lines later tonight. Consumer prices have plunged more in the past year than in any 12-month period in nearly six decades. A huge break for shoppers, but also a reminder that prices are being restrained by weak spending that's likely to slow an economic recovery. And more than 150 publicly traded U.S. lenders own what they call non-performing loans that equal 5% or more of their holdings, a level that former regulators say can wipe out a bank's equity and threaten its survival. The biggest banks with non-performing loans of at least 5% include Wisconsin's Marshalls and Isley, Georgia's Synovus Financial, and according to Bloomberg, also Michigan's Flagstar Bank Corporation, all of them. So we'll keep our eyes on these. Regulators have shut down Colonial Bank Group, a big lender in real estate development that buckled under the collapse of the market. It was the biggest U.S. bank to fail this year, $25 billion in assets. The FDIC has been appointed the receiver of the Montgomery, Alabama-based Colonial. Three decades after basking in the national spotlight as Squeaky Fromm, the infamous Charles Manson disciple who tried to assassinate the late then President George Gerald Ford, the now 60-year-old woman slipped quietly out of a federal prison in Texas Friday after being released on parole. A Russian-manned cargo ship that vanished last month, you heard us talk about that, in the Atlantic, has been found off the coast of West Africa. No word yet about the condition of the crew. There were 15 Russian sailors on that boat. NASA doesn't have enough money to meet its goal of putting astronauts back on the moon by 2020. And it might be the wrong place to go anyway, according to a report. That's one of the harsh messages emerging from a sweeping review of NASA's human spaceflight program. The Human Spaceflight Plans Committee, appointed by President Barack Obama and headed by retired aerospace executive Norman Augustine, has been trying to stitch together some kind of strategy for America's manned space program. We've got Robert Zubrin on the line with us, inventor of several unique concepts as well in Mars missions. He heads up the Mars Society. Robert, you were part of this committee. You testified there, didn't you?
Yes, I testified before it in Washington, D.C. a week ago. And it was like speaking to people whose brains were made out of wood.
They have no interest in going back to the moon, no interest in going to Mars either, I bet.
Exactly. What they're recommending is a program to keep the shuttle flying until 2015 in order to absorb all the money, and then complete the space station, which they then propose to ask more money to deorbit in 2020, if you can believe it. They actually want to spend the taxpayers' money to destroy the space station that we have built over a 30-year period at a cost of $40 billion or more.
Robert, why are their priorities all screwed up?
Their priority is to keep the money flowing to existing contractors. Look, NASA's budget this year, $18 billion, is actually the same as the average NASA budget in inflation-adjusted dollars as it was between 61 and 73 when we went to the moon and did everything else that was amazing by NASA. But what's happening is it's all being frittered away in a parasitic form, and these people are unwilling to recommend giving NASA a real priority. And as a result, NASA's support is eroding. You know, there's a famous Russian novel called Oblomov. It's about a Russian nobleman who fails in life because he refuses to get out of bed. And NASA is dying of Oblomovism. Look, they've got this challenge in front of them, humans to Mars. It's been in front of them since 1973. If they were to embrace that challenge, then Congress would be willing to give them the money to do it. You know, these people at this commission, they said, well, we should just ask the government for more money. We can't do anything without money. But they're not proposing to do anything. It's like an entrepreneur going to a venture capitalist and saying, give me money. And the venture capitalist says, why? And he says, well, if you don't give me money, I won't be able to do anything. That's not a convincing pitch.
No, it's not. What country will get to the moon this go-round before we do?
Well, if the advice of these people is taken, China will get to the moon before the United States.
All right.
And China will put its stamp on the human future as humanity moves out into space, because these people are proposing a go-nowhere, do-nothing program. You know, they act like, oh, gee, wouldn't it be great if we could do something, but they're afraid to actually propose anything. They act as if they're reporting not to the president, but to the Office of Management and the Budget. It's disgraceful. It's absolutely disgraceful what went on in this commission.
Robert, you keep abreast for us on this story, would you please? CoastToCoastAM.com, the feature story has to do with the something transported through Dallas. Go take a look at that video when you get a moment. Now, it could be part of a movie set, but you know what? It could also be a UFO on a flatbed moving through Dallas. Trouble is, they didn't cover it up. It's got a police escort, and people were going crazy calling local radio stations. We've got the story and the video at CoastToCoastAM.com. Rock band Aerosmith called off its remainder of its summer tour in the wake of singer Steven Tyler's onstage accident last week. The group made the announcement with great regret. The 61-year-old Tyler suffered head and shoulder injuries after falling off stage at a concert in South Dakota. Aerosmith had been scheduled to tour Canada and the U.S. until September 16. ZZ Top has been touring with them, so it's been called off. I'm going to tell you something fascinating. An all-new Detroit-area game development studio is now creating a new genre in entertainment. Those of you who love video games, listen to this. It's called Role Play TV, or RPTV. It's reality-based television in which gamers use video game play to determine the show storyline. Doug Kennison is the developer of this incredible work, and he's on the line with us. Doug, tell us, how does this work?
Well, basically, it'll work like this. The gameplay will drive the content of the story arcs of the show, and the show's content and the results will create new forms of gameplay in the video game. So what happens is they have, you know, they have the choice to control the outcome of the game, which generates more gameplay, vice versa.
How many different scenes or scenarios will you have on these games?
Well, the first season that we're going to be doing is going to have 10 different outcomes. It's going to have 10 different shows in what we call the mini-series. And it's going to have anywhere from hostage situations to bomb defusals and things like that.
And when you say they can change the outcome, I mean, what, can you play one person against another? And can they both do that or just one-on-one?
Oh, no, it's completely multiplayer. So you'd be at your house playing online, and I'd be at my house playing online, and maybe I think that this team should be the winner or that team should be the winner. So I choose my team, and you choose yours, and we can play up to 32 people at a time in groups and actually defeat. So if I play against you and I lose, well, your character in the show 2 weeks later is actually going to be the winner in that show.
Now, give me an example, Doug. Let's say I'm playing something like Madden's football, okay?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you play against the computer. I'm not playing against anybody else. You play against the computer. You either win or you lose. In this particular case, how do you change that?
Well, in this case, you would, as you play as your team, let's say you play as the Detroit Lions, and you're going to increase their 0-16 to 1-16. Okay,
just one win, I'd be happy with.
Exactly, we got to get something for Detroit. So what we do is we take the result of your gameplay and all the other gameplays, and then in the show is about the football characters and their daily lives and everything. But at the end of the episode, there's going to be this football game that's played against the Lions versus any of the other teams out there. And then because more Lions teams won over the course of the past 2 weeks, that's what's going to happen in the show. So your gameplay actually does control and affect everything about the show. It won't change the story entirely. It just changes whether the team wins and if they go on to the playoffs.
Fascinating. What's your website, Doug?
It's p15studios.com. That's the letter P as in Paul, the number 15studios.com.
Great. Good luck on this. That's fascinating. I love new inventions like that. Well, a man detective say attacked his doctor, biting off part of the doctor's finger, has now been arrested in Florida. That's where he was living. Dr. Paul Arnold turned his back for just a moment on a patient who was upset because the doctor would not write him a prescription. That's when the patient, a 45-year-old man of Fort Myers, attacked the 65-year-old doctor, biting off part of one of the doctor's fingers. Paramedics got there and treated the doctor, and like I said, this man has now been arrested. Now, listen to this one. This has got to be the Brain Dead Person of the Year award. A man has been arrested after he gave a cashier his account number and showed her his picture ID before robbing the bank. The 34-year-old man walked into a bank in Anchorage, Alaska, and asked to check his balance in his account. Well, the teller told him. He didn't have much in there, by the way. He then handed over a piece of paper with a note saying, "I have a gun. Give me all the money in the drawer." Well, he walked out of the bank with a few hundred dollars, but he was arrested after it turned out that the account number and the picture ID were truly his. Unbelievable. In a moment, we're going to begin an hour and a half of truly an incredible moment. We're going to be talking with the inventor of Frank's Box, a device that some say allows you to communicate with the other side, and also someone who has received box number 21. And then later tonight, Rosemary Ellen Guiley joins us with some more ghostly stories before we have open lines on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we've got a little bit of everything for you tonight. We'll have open lines. Rosemary Ellen Guiley joins us next hour, and two special guests this hour for you. Frank Sumption created Frank's Box to use to broadcast radio fragments as the source for raw audio used to form the building blocks of speech. The messages are assembled from the speech, which can be in any language. New predictions by Frank and other Box researchers speak of an event that may occur this week in America. We're going to talk about that. Bill Murphy has collaborated with Frank since 2006. He received box number 21 in March of 2007, which was used to hear a warning of global consequences witnessed by 75 people during this public demonstration. The aftermath of this warning, which culminated in the military operation code called Operation Orchard, convinced Bill that Frank's Box works in ways that still cannot be explained. Bill included an extensive interview with Frank in his workshop, where prototypes of unusual Frank's Boxes are shown in the documentary The Stanley Effect. Here's Frank. Here's Bill. Frank, welcome back, by the way. How are you?
Thanks. Pretty good.
Good to have you here. And Bill, welcome to you.
Hey, George. It's good to be here as well.
Great. Frank, tell us a little bit about Frank's Box. I know Rosemary loves it, talks about it. How many do you have out there now?
I don't remember how many I've given away. I'm on like in the mid-50s now of the ones I've built. Not all of those are boxes. Some of them didn't work out, so I use them for parts.
How did you first decide to build a box? What happened?
Well, I started out back in 1995, I got a Popular Electronics. It had an article about EVP in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried it back then in 95, and I didn't get anything. So I set the magazine aside, thinking I'd try it again later. So I came across the magazine in 2000, and I thought, well, I'll try that. Using the white noise, I tried the EVP recordings, and that time I got voices. It's been too long, I don't remember exactly what they said, but it seemed like somebody that I knew or knew me, and they were interacting. And I got all kinds of weird stuff on them. But eventually, it made my ears hurt trying to listen to the white noise.
Oh, yeah.
So I started looking for other methods and found EVP Maker. It's a program that runs on a computer, and it takes a wave audio file, chops that up, and then plays it back randomly while recording. And the entities will use that as raw audio forming their voices.
Interesting. Now, tell me, Frank, the theory or the science behind Frank's Box.
Well, it's kind of like EVP Maker. It provides the raw audio. And there seemed to be entities that couldn't use the computers, and that's what led me to think about what else I could use. And the idea kind of popped in my head about making the box.
When Rosemary was in the studio last year, she brought a couple of them, and different sizes, too. So as technology gets better, it looks like these boxes are getting more and more compact. Is that true?
But basically, it's just a radio that's swept across the tuning range that does the same thing as the EVP Maker and supplies raw audio. and the entities remodulate it somehow and make their voices.
Thomas Edison tried to build one of these a long time ago, didn't he? I've always heard that.
That's what I heard, but I'm not sure.
And also, Frank, there's something out there now called Spirit Calm. Is that like what you do?
I'm not sure. There's a newer version that uses different... I think they use some radios, but I'm not sure how it works. Unless you mean the older Spirit Calm from...
Yeah.
Like George Meek?
Yes.
No, he used a combination of tones, and then he transmit that over, I think, a Citizen band frequencies, like 27 megahertz. And then he had a little receiver, and the spirits would remodulate those tones to make voices.
Well, it's all sounds all about energy. Let's bring you in here, Bill. Tell me a little bit about how you decided to pick up box number 21.
Well, it's not like I necessarily picked that box. It's just that when I was in Colorado visiting Frank and we're in his workshop and he was giving a demonstration, the demonstration was on box 21, and then he gave it to me at the end of the interview. And I was extremely enthusiastic about getting it and trying it myself, you know, in my own lab environment.
Now, tell me what happened in March of 2007.
Well, this was a real surprise. Okay, so I got the box in March 2007, but it was later. It was in July of the same year. I was at another paranormal themed conference, and we were presenting various tools for researchers and for the paranormal enthusiasts, and I had box 21 with me, and so we fired it up and explained the concept as best as we could. You know, Frank explains it certainly better than anybody, but explained that it's using broadcast radio fragments to obtain the raw audio, which is then used to form the messages. And I asked that people not ask questions of a personal nature, because I didn't want somebody to hear something that they didn't want to hear.
I understand, yeah.
So instead, you know, we get this warning of global consequences, and I was thinking, how horribly wrong could this have gone? Here I was saying, don't ask anything of personal nature, and now, you know, we get this message, and I'll tell you what it said, and it was, as you stated, there were 75 people there. It stated that there would be a nuclear attack on Israel launched from Syria with weapons supplied by the North Koreans. And I thought, this is so inflammatory to hear this in this public setting. But then it gave a date of January 2008 when this would occur. And I wasn't trying to decipher the box. I was letting the group, you know, come to a consensus of what these messages were. And we were writing it down. And I was just like, I was not happy with getting this in front of all these people. But nevertheless, you know, I was watching the calendar and hoping that there would not be a mushroom cloud appearing somewhere.
Right.
And in January 2008, fortunately, there was no news to that effect. But the next month, in February 2008, there was a little small article that came out about a covert military operation that it was an airstrike onto Syria.
And they're right. That apparently took out what many think could have been a nuclear facility in Syria.
That's correct. And it was, you know, supplied by the North Koreans. So it seemed like the box was giving a possible future. And, George, I think it's safe to say that the Israeli intelligence does not rely on a Frank's box to launch airstrikes. So,
right.
Nevertheless, we heard information about something that was a the utmost guarded secret.
That you would not be privy to know at that time. There's just no way you would have known that Syria had this kind of facility and that Israel knew and that Israel was planning to take it out. There's no way you would have known that on your own.
There's no way we would have known it, and there's no way that if it was information that was leaked, that it would have been across every AM band out there that, you know, is in Los Angeles. So it was it came from a variety of fragments. You know, these words were formed, and so it was from that moment on. And anybody can actually Google, you know, Operation Orchard, and they can see the satellite photos. From that point on, I realized that there really is something to this box giving predictions.
Let's find out when we come back, Bill and Frank, just who might be giving these predictions, in your opinion. And then we'll also talk about what could very well be a new prediction that other researchers are beginning to pick up, including Frank, that may occur this week in this country or this coming week as well. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Open lines right around the corner. Rosemary Ellen Guiley joins us next hour as we talk about some ghostly work she's been working on. Hey, Saturday night on Coast to Coast AM, Ian Punnett. His special guest will be Dr. Bernard Haish as he talks about the universe and some incredible findings there. And then Sunday, George Knapp joins us as they talk about the devastating impact that overfishing is having on the world's oceans. And we'll be back in a moment with Bill Murphy and Frank Sumption on Coast to Coast AM. And we'll take some of your calls this hour as well with Bill Murphy and Frank Sumption. Frank, back to the box for a little bit. You've changed the design over years. What makes you change it? Technology or trial and error? How do you do that?
It's mostly trial and error. A couple of years ago, we found out that linear works actually better, a linear sweep rather than random.
Uh-huh.
And it's a lot simpler, and I can also run the systems on a single power supply. Instead of taking the plus and minus 12 volts, I use just a single 12-volt supply. And it's a lot simpler. And now that I did that, I can't get random to work hardly at all.
I've always believed, Frank, the other side, you know, is it's all about energy. And it sounds like that's what you tap into.
Something. I started out with random just because EVP Maker used random mode. So I thought that's how it had to be.
You know, like a Ouija board, people say, don't play around with these things. You open up a portal. You don't know what kind of entities might come through. Is there that danger with the box?
I don't know. I've never really experienced a portal, so I'm not sure what it is. And the only thing, I get some entities that cuss at me, call me names, and threaten sometimes, but it's nothing harmful. I ask them, what are you going to do, talk me to death or something? It's like, you know, it's like a paper tiger or something. But Chris Moon claims it opens portals. I don't know anything about that stuff.
Now, Bill, the messages that have been coming through of late, tell me about all this.
Well, they're giving a date of a particular type of catastrophe. It's a disaster. It's hard to tell if it's a man-made disaster or it's a natural disaster.
Okay.
But it's various people around the country are getting the same date.
What's the date?
It's the 15th of August.
15th. That's...
It's like tomorrow.
That's tomorrow.
Some people, it's now.
Okay.
But there's no year on this one as opposed to the one that I've gotten in July 2007.
Ah, there's no year.
Yeah.
So it could be 2010, 12, who knows, so far.
Right. It's it was kind of ironic that the date that this show was scheduled happened to coincide with these messages because... You know, I didn't mention to any of your producers about August 15th.
No, that's true. That is absolutely true.
So it landed on the 14th. It was like, oh my gosh, you know, we're gonna give these dates. We're not trying to have a War of the Worlds type of broadcast and say that all this stuff's gonna happen. And furthermore, do you really want to take an action in this physical world for messages coming through the box? In the case of what happened with Operation Orchard, that actually physical action was needed, if that is a true operation, because there's been denials, of course. But in the case of this latest stuff, it's focused on the entire East Coast.
Okay, so East Coast on an August 15th, and I will stress that, on an August 15th. We don't know which one. Something on the East Coast. Do they elaborate a little bit further on what?
It's apparently from the water. So it's like a it's an ocean. As a matter of fact, I believe that your producers have some of the sound files. I'm not sure if you'll be able to play them tonight or not, but it's being kind of specific with the messages. I can, you know, read some of the file names for you, but it's like on the 15th, the coast are clobbered in August. Eastern is one of the files that we have sent, and then we have other researchers that then started making inquiries because not everybody will ask questions during a box session. As a matter of fact, Frank, you know, only yesterday started even asking questions during a box session. Normally he just turns it on, lets it run, and records. And these dates started coming through without any sort of prompting. But other people around the country started getting them, and they began to ask. And then Frank began to ask. And it's something that's going to happen in the coast. It's something that's going to hit the waters, kind of the message has been received by a lot of people.
Could be an asteroid, could be a tsunami, could be just about anything.
They seem to talk about a big rock. I mean, there's a researcher in New Jersey that did more recordings after I got the first one. And they were talking about a big rock and it hitting the water and also the water getting deep.
Now, this is strange because let me tell you something, Frank and Bill. Yesterday, I don't know why, as I was driving home, something came into my head that an asteroid was going to plunge into the Atlantic. Not huge, not earth-shattering, but something that would create a tsunami and some damage. And I was thinking about that, and maybe it was because of the story that the government doesn't have enough money to spend for asteroid searching. But it hit me, and I felt that, and now you tell me this. This is weird.
That's pretty consistent with what I'm getting through the box.
That really is, your statement is kind of surprising, George. I mean, it coincides exactly with the box messages. And I'm sure this came in your head. You weren't listening to a Frank's box, I don't believe.
I was not listening to a Frank's box. Maybe I have Frank's box in my head.
Well, you might be getting the same type of entities communicating telepathically.
Exactly. Let's take a few calls while we talk about this. But you're beginning to get this from people who have all the Frank's boxes? Is that what's happening?
It's not everybody who has a Frank's box is always sending files back and forth, but there's a core group of us that share files.
And the voice or the activity that is coming through, does it identify itself?
No.
Not usually to me, but they have a certain like tone in their voice. It sounds like they're like higher beings, or they have like a certain air of authority about them.
Let's go to Watson, Arkansas, east of the Rockies. Russell, it's your turn. Go ahead, Russell.
Wow, man, this is a dream come true. Hey, I was wondering, maybe they could use their box to find out where Osama bin Laden is, huh?
Now, that's not a bad idea. Can you use it to ask questions, Frank? Can you say, where's Osama bin Laden? Help us out.
I don't know if that'd work or not. I think first you have to be interested in it. But I just now started asking questions. Usually I just do my recordings. I'll announce I'm doing an EVP recording, let it run for a few minutes, and then I listen to the recording.
You know,
I'm not that experienced.
I know listening to some of the recordings that Rosemary has done, she does try to ask this spirit or whatever it may be questions. Most of them seem to mock her or to be mischief makers. Bill, have you found that to be the case?
Oh, yeah. These voices will curse at you. I mean, some of the messages are so, you know, sinister sounding to the point of almost becoming stereotypical. And from Frank and from my own belief system, I tend to be very quickly dismissive of those kind of messages, but they're undeniable, and they curse at you with the foulest choice of words.
Next up, we will go to another call. Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hello, this is George Steele.
Hey, George, go ahead with your question.
Well, has there been any volcanic activity on the island of La Palma?
Well, that's where they say could create a massive tsunami on the East Coast. There has not been any volcanic activity there to date. But let me tell you, if that thing goes, we're going to have a problem. Good question.
Every once in a while, the boxes will talk about a volcano, and sometimes they talk about Mount Etna. The big one in Italy.
Frank, where do you see this technology going?
I'm not sure. I'm not really an engineer. I'm just a technician. But I'm just trying to get it as clear as possible. I just keep trying new ideas and making it better and better.
George, I'd like to weigh in on that if I could.
Sure, Bill. Sure.
There's what Frank has done, he's inspired a lot of other, you know, engineers and manufacturers and developers to kind of pick up work that Frank has begun for everybody, and Frank has taken it really far, but then you have some other people that are trying to mass produce some of these items in varieties of the theme, for lack of a better term. And if I could mention something really quickly, there's going to be a group of people that are going to be coming together just next month, and a number of them will be showing their what's called swept tune devices.
Now tell me what that is.
Your listeners can go to darknessevent.com.
Darkness event?
With an S at the end.
Yes, okay.
Darknessevent.com, and they'll see on there a number of speakers, and it's a real balanced event. So there's going to be, like Michael Shermer is going to be at the event, Dr. Shermer, and as well as Frank is going to be there, I'm going to be there. People that have created other instrumentation. So everybody's going to be putting everything on the table for everybody to look at, to try, to evaluate. And some of the new stuff that is based on Frank's development here is pretty exciting. I mean, even Frank is enthusiastic about it because, as he mentioned, he has given his boxes away, and it's a sort of a relief to him to see that other people have come in and manufacturers have decided to offer these things to the public at very affordable prices.
I was going to say, has any major industry jumped all over this? And it sounds like they're at least starting to look at this now, Bill.
Major industry has, actually. One of the manufacturers in particular is very mainstream with consumer electronics. And everybody was pleased when this particular company came on board. But there's some also real innovators, too. They don't necessarily have the mass production capability, but they've got some good engineers on their team. And so you're going to see a lot of varieties, a lot of different choices, a lot of actually new features being included into French boxes, like recording straight to the box into onboard memory and having USB jack, for example. Some people were inspired by Frank's video box, which is in the extras disc on the Stanley Effect, and they're creating video versions of Frank's box. So you're going to see a lot of stuff. I think right now, if I had to count, it's probably close to a dozen different varieties have been in development. Hopefully they'll all will make a debut September 10th through 13th.
Let's go to Knoxville, Tennessee. First-time caller. Ed, you're up with us. Go ahead, Ed.
Thank you very much.
Sure thing.
One of the things that fascinates me about this is that years ago my mother told me that Edison and Houdini had a pact, that whichever one passed away first would try to contact with the other. And Edison made the remarks that he could hear Houdini trying, but he had no way of proving it. And then my mother also told me that later that she would try to contact me if she passed away, and she did. But, you know, sometimes I can feel her presence and that sort of thing.
Sure.
But, you know, it was just it was just something whenever I heard you make the remark that Edison had tried to build such a box.
How did your mother's contact come to you, Ed?
Oh, it's just basically, you know, it's like I can almost internally hear her voice. Like if I'm doing something that I know she, you know, wouldn't approve of, or, you know, that sort of thing. I can just feel her presence sometimes. If I remember right, you were talking about a possible tsunami. If I remember right, in the writings of Nostradamus, there was supposedly going to be a crash in the Indian Ocean in August 15th of 1984. That didn't happen. Icarus and Hermes are both asteroids that make close calls by our planet. In fact, I think at one time Hermes passed between the moon and the earth, you know, which is really a very close shot.
Well, let me ask Frank this. Where do you think these sounds are coming from? I mean, are they coming from within this universe, through another dimension? Are you tapping into a different universe? We know they're out there, but where are they coming from?
I can't tell for sure. There seems to be multiple levels, at least. It depends. You turn on the box, sometimes you get one set of voices. I get one group, they sound like they have a Russian accent, and they call themselves Soviets. And I only get them once in a while. Then I get other guys that claim they're from another planet. Every once in a while, there's the guys that from the sixth planet that come through. And every few months, I get this guy who says, "This is your friend from Rigel." So I'm guessing it's the same universe, but different dimensions. I don't know. And usually, they don't identify themselves.
That's interesting. That's fascinating.
But he talked about August 15th back in 1984 or something. That brings up that problem. You don't. They might not know what year they're talking about.
See, and that's something, you know, today, as we get into August 15th,
yeah,
we'll come and go, and people will say, "Ha, see, it doesn't work." But
yeah,
then you got to remember next year, and maybe the year after.
I was trying to do some recordings tonight, and I got one box says, "Oh, it's all lies" when I asked about August 15th. And the next one says, "It's true, but it's 3 years to go." Yes, meaning it might be 2012 stuff.
Well, I guess it's a date that will live in infamy. People need to remember it.
Yeah, I just like to tell people that you can't take this stuff like it's gospel. It's not. I just find the voice is so intriguing. If something talks, it isn't supposed to be there. That's what holds my interest, but I don't take it as gospel or anything. It's like I have to listen to them.
All right, let's go to Columbus, Ohio, east of the Rockies. Hello there, Anonymous.
Good evening, guys.
Hi.
Really glad to get on tonight. I just had a couple of elements that I wanted to ask you about. One being, to be honest with you, I really believe that there is a sinister quality involved with contact from, well, unusual places, I guess you could say. But don't you think that we would be experiencing these things and being able to recognize them as the same forces if they affected us without this technology? Or is it based on the technology? Is this a very important element for them?
Let's let you handle that, Bill.
Well, and this is where Frank and I sometimes don't agree, actually, because the way Frank explained to me, it's the technology is what's enabling it. However, what many of the people who have boxes have found is that the operator becomes really part of the device, and because they will simply call the name out of the person who seems to be the primary operator of the box. So it's almost like it's facilitating perhaps a psychic interaction. And it's an odd thing to have happen. When I got Frank's box from him, for several weeks it was calling Frank's name. And we were recording this. And in one case, Frank Sumption, which is not a common name. And gradually over time, that began to change. And I left a video camera going into a session that I had a box session. And when I left the room, they had other people still there in the room. And the box ended up calling my name, which is kind of, you know, Bill Murphy isn't the most common name. I mean, it's not that unusual, but still, for it to call my name when I left the room. And then it started to do that a little more frequently. And so I don't think it's just technology reliant. There is the human component.
Bill, have you ever been scared to turn this device on?
Well, I was a little scared one time when I did turn it on, not before I turned it on, but after I turned it on. And the reason why is because a recognizable voice came through of a friend of mine. And I like to have box sessions with other people there so we can sort of write down what we're hearing as opposed to influencing each other and saying what we're hearing. And we both heard the voice of another researcher. And now the part that was kind of scary is that my friend Sid had a neurological ailment that came over him, and he was nearly incapacitated with this, and he didn't know what it was. It was became a real medical issue because his eyes were closing and his mouth was drooping, and it seemed like an aneurysm was slowly taking an effect. So it seemed like a stroke was being come on. So why his voice started to come through the box was kind of alarming because it's like, wait, what's the implication for this? Let me call Sid. And I tried calling his number. I went to voicemail for 2 days before I reached them.
Well, we're going to watch this date, August 15th, for the next, I don't know, how many years, but maybe It'll happen on Saturday. Something on the East Coast. Something in the ocean. I'm George Norrie, back with Rosemary Ellen Guiley in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM.